This is what the Lord has said in Revelation chapter 9, verse 1. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit, and there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. And in those days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle, and on their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold, and their faces were as the faces of men, and they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions, and they had breastplates as it were breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle, and they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails. And their power was to hurt men 5 months. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. One woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter. May the Lord bless the reading of his word to our hearts today. Today we will begin to look into the fifth of these trumpets. We've already seen the first four trumpets as they affect the land, the salt water, the fresh water, and then the fourth one affecting the heavenly bodies, the sun, moon, and stars. These trumpets, as we have already said, are heralding an attack against the earth. Each one brings its own attack against the inhabitants of the earth that have rejected God and harmed his people. And so, one after the other, God is bringing these amazing, amazing plagues against the world, and the world is more and more dreading the sound of yet one more trumpet being blown in the heavens. But today we're going to consider the fifth. This fifth trumpet is the first of the three woes. It is set apart from the first four trumpets by the angel that proclaimed at the end of chapter 8 that there are three woes to come. And this is the first of those three woes. We can presume it comes before the other two. In time reference, chronologically, and not as intense as the other two that are to follow, but greater in its degree than the first four that have already blown in chapter 8. When the fifth angel sounds, it says in verse 1 that a star falls from heaven. This is similar to what we saw in chapter 8, verse 10, where it says, "And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers, and upon the fountains and waters, and the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the water, because they were made bitter." So there was a star that fell before with the blowing of the third trumpet, now with the fifth trumpet, there is another star that falls. In the sermon today, I want to consider three questions. The first question is, what is or who is this star that falls? The second question relates to, who is given the key of the bottomless pit? Is it the star or is it the angel that blew the trumpet? And then lastly, I want to consider probably one of the more significant questions that people think about as they read the book of Revelation. What does it mean by a bottomless pit? What does the book of Revelation mean by a bottomless pit? And so we'll answer all these questions today. So let's consider the first question. Who or what is this star that falls from heaven to the earth? It doesn't seem to have too much significance in the blowing of this trumpet, unless it is the one that's given the key to the bottomless pit, which is the question that we'll talk about after this question. To reflect again upon how commentators have taken this trumpet as a whole, but more specifically what the star is, we recall that John Gill gave a historical explanation of the different trumpets, and he considered this star to be the prophecy of the Pope or Muhammad, the Pope being Antichrist, and Muhammad, of course, being the leader of the Muslims. He could see either the Pope or Muhammad as the star that falls from heaven. So he takes it in an allegorical or symbolic way to refer to one of those men. Matthew Henry's commentary indicates this to be an eminent false teacher. So he is a teacher that teaches lies and false doctrines, but very prominent. Presumably he gets that because it's a star with its glory. And so he considers this someone in church history that was a very prominent false teacher that led the church astray. Another commentator by the name of Sweet proves the historical view to be incorrect when it concerns this fifth trumpet. He goes into some detail as to why John Gill and others who take the historical view of the trumpets, that these trumpets are blown over and over and over again throughout church history, or they cover a certain period of church history and progressively work through the church age. And so he would argue against that historical understanding. He notices that in chapter 9, verse 4, it says, "And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads." So if this was the historical view, and if this star falling and the attack against the Christians coming from either the Muslims or the false teaching of the Roman Catholic Church, as John Gill and others would suggest, then it doesn't relate to the actual events in church history. For instance, these locusts are only allowed to hurt the people of the earth that don't have the seal of God. False teaching doesn't just hurt, it spiritually kills the people. It doesn't just harm them, they actually die. And of course, the Muslims, if these attack, these locusts are representative symbolically of the Muslims didn't just hurt the Christians, they came to kill. And so, understanding this trumpet and the locus of this trumpet in that historical way, and therefore the star being Muhammad or the Pope, it just doesn't fit. If you look at several commentators, they would explain this star to be the devil himself. This is Satan falling out of heaven in some way, whether symbolically or literally, he is falling from heaven. Of course, we could say that it's just a star. It's just a meteor, like with the third trumpet and the star that fell from heaven there. There, the star is named Wormwood. There is no name given to this star in chapter 9, verse 1. But again, we have to ask, what is the significance of the star? Well, first off, we can consider that if it is just a literal star, he certainly cannot take the key of the bottomless pit in the next phrase. That would answer our second question that we are going to raise in just a little bit, because, of course, stars cannot take the key. And if it just falls from heaven, if this star is simply falling from heaven and not even taking the key, then it is just a coincidental event that just comes down out of heaven at the time of the blowing of the trumpet, but there's no significance to it, which would be very strange. This inclines me to the view that it is a reference to the devil. Star is a reference to the devil, and he would be falling from heaven, as Revelation chapter 12 is going to go into more detail. But before we go to Revelation 12 to see the implications of that, I'd like to first remind us of just how stars are seen in the whole book of Revelation, sometimes symbolically, sometimes literal stars. In chapter 1, we saw seven stars in the hand of the Son of Man in the midst of the seven golden candlesticks. And in chapter 1, it's very clearly stated that those seven stars are the angels of the churches, or the pastors of the churches. And so a very symbolic reference for those seven stars in chapter 1. The overcomers of the church of Thyatira are told that they shall receive the morning star as a reward for overcoming. And I made reference to the fact that Revelation 22 says that Christ himself is the bright and morning star. He, in chapter 22, calls himself the bright and morning star. And so I suggested that the reward for those that overcome is the morning star, which is Christ. And if that is the case, then again, another star, which is symbolic of a great person, Jesus Christ himself. When we looked at the sixth seal, we saw literal stars fall from heaven. The sun was darkened, the moon was turned to blood, and the stars fell out of heaven as if shaken by a mighty wind during the great earthquake of chapter 6. These, I explained, are the literal stars that are in heaven right now. And after that great earthquake, they will not be in heaven anymore. And so Revelation does speak about stars in a literal sense, not just symbolic. Of course, in the last chapter, chapter 8, we saw the third trumpet blow and the star falling from heaven. I would say this definitely is a literal star or a meteor that looks like a star, has that appearance, and so John calls it a star. Of course, in John's day, they didn't use all the modern classifications of what is a star, what is a meteor, and such things. Modern terminology for such things. The falling star was a literal star or meteor that's going to come down, not an angel. With the fourth trumpet, a third of the literal stars are supposed to be darkened, with a third of the sun and a third of the moon, so that a third of the day does not shine and a third of the night does not shine. And so the stars are the literal stars there. And then in chapter 12, we will see that there's a garland of 12 stars around the woman's head of chapter 12. When we get there, we're going to explain that that woman is Jerusalem, and that those 12 stars represent each of the 12 sons of Israel, or the 12 tribes of Israel. There again, we see a symbolic meaning of the stars. And in chapter 12, there's a third of the stars that are pulled out of heaven by the dragon's tail. Some believe that that reference in chapter 12 is to Satan's rebellion and his fall from heaven in the past, at the beginning of time when he chose to rebel against God and he drew the angels, the fallen angels, a third of the fallen angels with him. I am going to explain that that is a misunderstanding of that passage of Revelation 12, and it's not told anywhere else. And so that whole story of Satan falling from heaven at that time is incorrect. He certainly did rebel against God, and that's very clearly seen and understood from Scripture. But that fulfillment of falling from heaven has not happened as of yet. What I am going to suggest is that very well may be what's going on here in the fifth trumpet when it's blown, that the star falling from heaven is Satan falling at the time that God casts him out of heaven. And so let's go to Revelation chapter 12. Let's look at what this passage says concerning the dragon. Verse 3, "And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his head. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven." That's the passage we were referring to with the stars. "And did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and to his throne." We will explain that when we get to this passage. Let me jump to verse 7. "And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought against his angels, and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now is come salvation and strength, and the kingdom of our God, and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accuseth them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he had but a short time." So, this is when the dragon is cast out from heaven, not at the beginning of the time of creation, but rather sometime yet in the future during the tribulation time, when Michael and his angels finally kick out the devil from heaven. We will go into more detail when we finally get to that chapter. Some other passages of Scripture that we might want to consider as we think about this star falling in chapter 9, how it could be the devil. If we looked back at Job 38, 4 through 7, we would see that the angels of God are called the morning stars, that they sing at the creation. These are angels being referred to as stars. So even back in Job's time, already this idea that angels could be referred to as stars is already in place in the minds of men. Of course, angels are called stars because they are bright and glorious. in their appearance. Let's go back then to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Holy angels are bright and glorious, but what about fallen angels? Well, 2 Corinthians chapter 11 verse 13 says, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works." So here Satan himself can appear as an angel of light, and therefore also be called, in a sense, a star. If we go back to Luke chapter 10, verse 17 says, "And the 70 returned again with joy, saying, Lord, even the devils are subject unto us through thy name. And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Behold, I give unto you power to tread on serpents and scorpions, and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you." So this passage is used to say that Christ saw Satan being cast out of heaven at the beginning of time when he rebelled. I would explain this rather to be Christ speaking as a prophet. When he says that he beheld Satan in the past, it's because he saw the revelation of Satan being cast out of heaven in the past, as a prophet would speak about his past vision. It doesn't mean that the actual event of Satan falling is in the past, but the prophecy of it came to Christ in the past before he said these words to the 70. But notice what it says about how Satan falls. He says, Satan as lightning fall from heaven. So very bright light as Satan falls from heaven. Would this not be similar to the star falling in Revelation chapter 9? The reference would be then to Satan being kicked out of heaven in Revelation chapter 12. It in no way hinders my understanding to see only one star, not many stars, fall out of heaven, because Satan goes into battle against Michael with his angels, and they all fall to the earth. Nevertheless, I think that Satan, being the prominent one, is seen as the star falling from heaven. If this is the case, the star falling from heaven at the time of the blowing of the fifth trumpet put Satan's fall a few months, maybe a year, before the middle of the tribulation. Why is that significant? Well, if we consider the world at this time, where a trumpet is blown and some amazing event occurs, we can picture a world terrified of the next trumpet being blown. In fact, a world looking up in the sky to see what's going to fall out of the sky when the next trumpet blows. As the four trumpets have already blown, now the fifth trumpet blows, and not only does a star fall, but then all these locusts come and attack men for 5 months. And then next, there's going to be the sixth trumpet, when a third of the earth is killed by horses. And we'll cover both of those trumpets in the next few sermons. But with everybody listening for the next trumpet, everybody looking up in the sky for the next great event to occur, they will not be looking down at who are the enemies that might be attacking them. Particularly Israel will be looking up in the sky and not necessarily looking at the Antichrist, who has made a peace treaty with them and they're not concerned about him. So when he does attack Jerusalem, it is a surprise. Now, it also has the effect that Satan, as we read Revelation chapter 12, it's very clear that he is determined to swallow up the male child as soon as he is born. He is out to get the male child. The birth of the male child, the birth of the 144,000, as I'll explain, happens at the beginning of the tribulation. But the dragon, Satan, is seeking to wipe them out. And that's ultimately what is the driving force of the Antichrist's attack in the middle of the tribulation when he attacks Jerusalem. So, Satan has a few months to prepare for this attack. He has a great desire, but he has to get the plans together for the Antichrist to attack Jerusalem at the time that he so chooses. And so, falling at the time of the fifth trumpet will give him a few months before he attacks Jerusalem by the time of the middle of the tribulation. Again, all these matters we will discuss later. So I would suggest that this star that falls out of heaven with the fifth trumpet is actually Satan himself. The second question relates to the key of the bottomless pit. It says in verse 1, "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit." So who is given the key of the bottomless pit? Is it the angel that blew the trumpet, or is it this star that falls down out of heaven? You'll notice verse 11. "And they had a king over them," referring to these locusts that come with the fifth trumpet. "They had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon," or destroyer is the meaning of both Abaddon and Apollyon. So presumably this angel of the bottomless pit is the one that receives the key of the bottomless pit, so that he would then be considered the angel of the bottomless pit. So again, the question is, who receives this key? Is it the star? Is that the angel that falls from heaven and receives this key and control of the bottomless pit? Or is it the fifth angel that blew the trumpet in the first place and receives the key? Of course, if the star is Satan, that would certainly explain how he could be called the angel of the bottomless pit, because he is an angel. But you'll notice in chapter 20 of Revelation, verse 1, this key of the bottomless pit comes up again in chapter 20, verse 1, where it says, "And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit, and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, the old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and set a seal upon him, that he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years should be fulfilled." Here comes another angel, and he has the key to the bottomless pit, and he's taking Satan and binding him. So I would understand that there is only one key to the bottomless pit. Only one person can open the bottomless pit, and that key in chapter 20 belongs to a righteous angel who captures Satan and casts him into the bottomless pit, binds him there. So, is that angel the same as the fifth angel that sounds here in chapter 9, sounds the trumpet in chapter 9? I think that certainly could be the case. Now, of course, this is an angel that would be very destructive, as he is leading this great horde of locusts, and is even given the name Abaddon and Apollyon, which means destroyer. Can a righteous angel be considered a destroying angel? And the answer is yes. The righteous angels do much destruction in their wars and battles. And it's actually not a misunderstanding at all that they could have a name such as destroyer and lead locusts into battle to afflict people that God is out to harm and to punish for what they have done against the righteous. So I would say, yes, this could be a righteous angel who is leading the locusts, that there is no problem with that. And I would say that there are other angels that not only blow trumpets and pour out bowls, but they also take part in the punishment themselves. Some of the angels seem to just blow the trumpets and bad things happen to the world. Others not only blow the trumpets, but then participate in what happens. If we even just look at the very next angel in verse 13 of chapter 9. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel, which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. So here the sixth angel blows the trumpet, but he's not done. He is told to go and loose the four angels in the Euphrates River, and he does it. And so he's participating in the judgment itself. Let's go to chapter 16. Chapter 16. Verse 8 says, and the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and blasphemed the name of God, which hath power over these plagues. And they repented not to give him glory. So here the fourth angel, the fourth with the bowls, he pours it out, but then he's given power to afflict people with this heat. He's participating in the judgment personally. Chapter 17, verse 1 says, and there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and so forth. So again, here is one of the angels which was participating in the pouring out of the bowls. Now he's participating in the further revelation that John is receiving in a very active way. Chapter 21, verse 9, where it says, and there came unto me one of the seven angels which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And so, again, another one of the angels, maybe the same angel that poured out the bowls of judgment, is continuing to participate in the revelation itself. And so, since that is the case, it would make sense that when the fifth angel blows his trumpet in chapter 9, verse 1, he is the one that is given the key to the bottomless pit, and he then becomes the king of these locusts, as he leads them into battle against a world that has rejected his God. Then we have one last question. What is the bottomless pit? What is the bottomless pit? Certainly it is the terms like paradise, which we have already explained as the garden, place of heaven, and the garden of the New Jerusalem that is in heaven, but it's terms like the bottomless pit and paradise, which in part contributes to the mystery of the book of Revelation. Recently, even, I saw a video of a commentator, a Bible teacher, who was seeking to explain what this bottomless pit was. And basically, he drew the globe, the earth, and in the middle of this earth was a shaft that he drew. And that long shaft had no bottom. And basically, he understood that Satan is falling down this shaft for 1,000 years, and he's never able to free himself from this shaft, that he just falls and falls and falls. That would be the bottomless pit. But is that what the scripture is teaching us, is the bottomless pit? Well, first off, let's again center our attention on the words itself. In verse 1, it says, key of the bottomless pit. That is, in the Greek, literally, the pit of the abyss. The pit of the abyss. And that word abyss is actually the word that we need to focus on. The bottomless pit is the abyss. The word there, the pit, two words in the Greek, the pit of the abyss in verse 1, and then verse 2 it says, and he opened the bottomless pit, again the pit of the abyss there in verse 2, down in verse chapter 9 verse 11, and they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, the angel of the abyss. So it drops the Greek word for the pit, and it just has the word abyss, the angel of the abyss. If we go to chapter 11, verse 7, we see this word again. Chapter 11, verse 7, concerning the two witnesses. And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. So now the beast, which we are going to understand to be the Antichrist, he is associated with this bottomless pit. He comes out of the bottomless pit. And again, the word in the Greek is simply abyss. He comes out of the abyss. Now, chapter 17, verse 8. Chapter 17, verse 8 says, the beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. Again, exactly what we just read. The beast comes out of the bottomless pit and goes into perdition. And so he comes up out of the abyss and he departs into destruction. That's what perdition there means. He goes to destruction. Then finally, in chapter 20, verses 1 through 3, we just read about Satan being cast into the bottomless pit. And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit, or the abyss, and a great chain in his hand, and he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the abyss, the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and so forth. And so, those are the references which the book of Revelation refers to, this bottomless pit, or in the Greek again, it is the word abyss. Outside of the book of Revelation, in the New Testament, we can go back to Luke chapter 8. Let's go back to Luke chapter 8. This is really an amazing study, by the way. Very interesting to understand what is this bottomless pit. In Luke 8, verse 31, the King James translators, instead of translating it as bottomless pit, rather translated it as the deep. So, verse 31, it says, and they, which is the legion, the man that was indwelled by many demons, he called himself the legion, they, the demons, besought Jesus that he would not command them to go out into the deep, That's the word, the abyss. And there was there a herd of many swine feeding on the mountain, and they besought him that he would suffer them to enter into them. So, the story of Jesus casting out all these demons relates to the demons mention the abyss, the same place that is called the bottomless pit in the book of Revelation. But here it's translated the deep, the deep. Then also let's go to Romans chapter 10. Romans chapter 10. And this is the last of the passages in the New Testament where the abyss is used. Verse 7. Chapter 10, verse 7. Romans 10, 7. Let me back up to verse 6. But the righteousness which is of faith speaketh on this wise. Say not in thine heart, who shall ascend into heaven, that is, to bring Christ down from above, or who shall descend into the deep, that is the word, the abyss again. Who shall descend into the deep, that is, to bring up Christ again from the dead? But what saith it? The word is near nigh thee, even in thy mouth and in thy heart. That is the word of faith which we preach. And so here, quoting from Deuteronomy, he uses the word abyss, and the King James translators translate it the deep. And so, what is this bottomless pit? What is this word, or this place, referred to by the Greek word abyss? Well, the Old Testament, the Septuagint, which translates the Hebrew of the Old Testament into Greek, is very helpful in very clearly identifying what this abyss is. If we go back to Genesis chapter 1 and verse 2, we find the word abyss used here in the Septuagint, where it says, "And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep." That's the word abyss. "And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters." The abyss is the deep, as the other two passages outside of Revelation did translate it, the deep, which is the sea, which is the many waters. And so, let's go to Genesis chapter 7, verse 11. Genesis 7, 11. "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep," the word abyss there, "the great deep are broken up, and the windows of heaven were open." Very clearly, the abyss is the ocean or the sea. Deuteronomy 33, verse 13. Deuteronomy 33, 13. "And of Joseph he said, Blessed of the Lord be his land, for the precious things of heaven, for the dew, and for the deep that crouches beneath." There the word the abyss is used again. Finally, let's look at Jonah chapter 2. There are other passages we could look at, but these passages are clear enough in themselves as to what the abyss is. Jonah chapter 2, verse 5. The prayer of Jonah as he's in the whale in chapter 2, verse 5. "The waters compass me about, even to the soul. The depths clothed me round about. The weeds were wrapped about my head." The word there for the depth closed round about me is the deep or the abyss in the Septuagint. So very clearly we see what is the abyss. It is the sea or the ocean, a great body of water. Now let's go back to Revelation. Let's go to Revelation 11 again. Revelation 11, verse 7, which we read before. "And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them. So again, we see the beast coming up out of the abyss, out of this bottomless pit. And, as we said, chapter 17, verse 8, chapter 17, verse 8, the same thing is stated. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, or the abyss, and go into perdition. So very clearly, the beast comes up out of this bottomless pit. But now let's go back to chapter 13, verse 1, where John actually sees him coming up out of this bottomless pit. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea. So where does the beast come from? He comes from the abyss. But what is the abyss? Very clearly it's stated in chapter 13, verse 1, to be the sea. It's a different Greek word, but they're synonymous with one another. The abyss is the sea, and particularly here pictures the Mediterranean Sea. He's coming up, rising out of the Mediterranean for an amphibious attack against Israel, which again we will discuss when we get to that chapter. But for our understanding here of what the bottomless pit is, Revelation actually very clearly indicates what the bottomless pit is. It is the sea which the beast comes up out of. And so again, we are seeing all the same indications. The Greek word is thalasse, which is synonymous with the deep. And thalasse can be translated sea. Then let's go. Since we have a clear understanding now of Revelation's bottomless pit, let's go back to Romans chapter 10, where Paul uses the word abyss, and it's translated in the King James to be the deep. Romans chapter 10, verse 6 says, "But the righteousness which is of faith speaketh on this wise, say not in thine heart, who shall ascend into heaven, that is, to bring Christ down from above, or who shall descend into the deep, that is, to bring up Christ from the dead. But what saith it? The word is nigh thee, even in thy mouth and in thy heart, that is the word of faith which we preach." Paul here uses the word abyss. The King James translators translated the deep. But it's helpful to see the passage that Paul is referring to. So let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Deuteronomy chapter 30. Deuteronomy 30 verse 11 says, "For this commandment which I command thee this day," of course this is Moses speaking, "it is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that thou shouldest say, who shall go up for us to heaven and bring it unto us that we may hear it and do it? Neither is it beyond the sea that thou shouldest say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it unto us that we may hear it and do it? But the word is very nigh unto thee in thy mouth and in thy heart that thou mayest do it." We see the very clear connection between Paul in Romans 10 and this passage. Paul doesn't use the exact words in his Romans 10 that is used in Deuteronomy 30, but we see that verse 13 of Deuteronomy 30, "neither is it beyond the sea," relates to what Paul says concerning the abyss. So Paul uses synonymous terms to relate to what Moses is speaking about, the sea, that is the abyss. That is the abyss. And Paul's reference back to that chapter helps us understand that even more clearly. And so let us then look at the irony of Luke chapter 8. The irony of Luke chapter 8. Because as we understand what this bottomless pit is, being the abyss, being the deep, being the sea, it It shows us the irony of what's going on in Luke chapter 8. It's actually pretty comical. Let us begin with verse 28. Luke 8:28. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, "What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God Most High? I beseech thee, torment me not." For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for oftentimes it had caught him, and he was kept bound with chains and in fetters, and he brake the bands and was driven of the devil into the wilderness. Verse 30. And Jesus asked him, saying, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Legion," because many devils were entered into him. Now again, verse 31 is the mention of the abyss. Verse 31. And they besought him that he would not command them to go into the deep, into the abyss. So they didn't want to be cast into the sea. They didn't want to be cast into the water. And there was there a herd of many swine feeding on the mountain, and they besought him that he would suffer them to enter into them. And Christ suffered them. Then went the devils out of the man and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the lake and were choked. Here is the irony of this story. These demons, many demons as they were, they did not want to be cast into the sea. Why? Because the sea ultimately, as we see with Satan, is a place where demons are bound. But they did not want to be cast into the sea, but they chose rather to be cast into the swine. But when they entered into the swine and made the swine crazy with their demonic impulses and ways, the swine ran violently into the sea that the devils did not want to go to in the first place. So there is irony in this story, if we were to understand what the word abyss truly means, that it is a reference to the water. Now, let's think about this idea that the water is a place of imprisonment for the demons. We've read some of these passages already, but if we go back to Revelation 9, verse 14, the blowing of the sixth trumpet, in verse 14 it says, "Saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates." And the four angels were loosed. So these angels, they were bound and kept prisoners since creation, basically, for this particular time, as the next verse indicates. But they're bound and held prisoner inside the river Euphrates. Interesting, very interesting that they are kept in the water. Chapter 20, of course, which we read, chapter 20, verse 1 and following, shows us that when Satan is finally bound, he's cast into the bottomless pit, which we now properly identify to be the sea. And so he's cast into the deep as well when he is bound. Maybe this helps us then to understand 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4, and its parallel in Jude. Let's start with 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4, where it says, "For if God spare not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell," the word there is Tartarus, "and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment." So it's questionable as to what Tartarus really implies, but they are kept in chains of darkness and reserved unto judgment. What if Tartarus is a place related to the sea? And just like Satan in Revelation and the four angels that are kept in the river Euphrates in Revelation, what if these angels, in their imprisonment, were cast into the deep, dark sea, and that is why they are kept in chains of darkness, as this verse indicates? And then if we go to Jude chapter 1, verse 6, Jude and Peter, or let me say Peter, often refers to what Paul and others say in their letters, including the small book of Jude. Very clearly, Peter is following the same thoughts that Jude is expressing. But Jude chapter 1, verse 6 speaks about these angels. And it says, "And the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting chains under darkness until the judgment of the great day." So again, what if these angels also, like Satan and like the four angels in the Euphrates, are bound in the sea, are kept in water, and in this case, such a deep, deep part of the sea that they are kept in total darkness? Kind of scary, actually, when you think about it. What if you go swimming in the Euphrates and you come face to face with the chained up demon? What if you go into the deep, deep sea and all of a sudden you see the eyes of a demon open up to see you and you see the chains that are wrapped around him? Kind of a spooky thing to think about. But nevertheless, God's word refers to what he's doing in this real world. And there is in the sea the angels that sinned in the days of Noah and have been kept there until the day of judgment, which is yet to come for all of us. And so if you go into the river Euphrates, you may not see them, but there are four angels bound in that river until the time of the sixth trumpet's blowing, and they're finally loosed to kill one-third of the earth. And ultimately, Satan himself is going to be kept imprisoned in the sea as well for 1,000 years until he's finally released and leads one final rebellion against Christ and finally is defeated by Christ after that rebellion. So now, the three questions we raised. What is the star? I would suggest that that is Satan falling from heaven when Michael in chapter 12 kicks him and the angels that are with him finally out of heaven. No longer is Satan able to come into the throne room of God as he did in the book of Job and accuse any of the Christians anymore. He will finally be cast out of heaven. And who receives the key of the bottomless pit? That was the second question. And there I suggested it was not the star that receives the key. It is rather the angel that blew the fifth trumpet. And he becomes the king of the locusts and is the one that is referred to as the destroyer that comes against this world. And then finally, the question of what is the bottomless pit? And there I explained the word abyss to very clearly in all of the passages refer to the deep, the ocean, the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. In Luke chapter 8, it seems to be more the Sea of Galilee, but the sea in some respect, the deep in some respect, the body of water, a very large body of water in some respect, which ultimately is a place of imprisonment for demons that are opposed to God. And so some very interesting truths as we study the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation, again, is considered a great mystery by so many. But if we take the time to study and understand what these mysteries actually mean, instead of the book of Revelation continuing to be the dark book of the Bible, which people don't even want to study because of its scariness and its mysteries that cannot be solved, actually the light of Christ can shine through this book and lead us to a better understanding of things that we have not considered before and draw even closer to God in the process.